C3 Radio aus dem Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung. Jedes Jahr wird am 20. Juni der Weltflüchtlingstag begangen. Zu diesem Anlass hat von 20. bis 21. Juni 2022 die von der ÖFSI mitorganisierte World Refugee Day Conference stattgefunden, unter dem Titel The War in Ukraine and Human Displacement. Im Juli haben wir bereits darüber berichtet. In dieser Ausgabe folgt der zweite Teil unseres Berichtes über die Konferenz. Bei C3 Radio begrüßt Sie Jürgen Planck. Der Krieg in der Ukraine ist der Hintergrund zur World Refugee Day Conference im C3. Am 24. Februar 2022 hat dieser Krieg als Eskalation eines gewalttätigen Konflikts begonnen, der bis ins Jahr 2014 zurückreicht. Durch die russische Invasion in der Ukraine ist die Zahl der Flüchtlinge auf über 100 Millionen Menschen weltweit angestiegen. Diese Zahl ist doppelt so hoch wie noch vor 10 Jahren. Laut UNHCR waren noch nie so viele Menschen auf der Flucht wie heute. In der Juli-Ausgabe unserer Sendung haben wir über das Panel berichtet, das sich mit dem Thema Herausforderungen der Massenfluchtbewegungen für Österreich auseinandergesetzt hat. Experte dazu war Lukas Garleitner-Gerz von der Asylkoordination. Außerdem haben wir Ausschnitte der Keynote von Irina Scherbakowa gebracht, nachhörbar unter anderem auf Spotify. Ein weiteres Panel hat sich im Rahmen der Konferenz dem Thema Die Antworten zur Massenflucht aus der Ukraine in Polen, Deutschland und Rumänien gewidmet. Darum wird es in der heutigen Sendung gehen. Chair Wiebke Sievers leitet wie folgt ein und stellt die erste Diskutantin vor.
The EU activated for the first time the mass flight directive, so the refugees don't have to go through long asylum procedures, but they have access to temporary protection for 3 years, as far as I know. And this panel aims to look at the, or take a comparative look at how this works in practice in three different contexts. First speaker, Karolina Lukasiewicz. She is a Marie Curie researcher at the Center of Migration Research in Warsaw, and she's worked a lot on immigrant integration and on poverty policies in urban contexts, but she's recently also moved on to work on refugees from the Ukrainian context in Warsaw, and she will talk today on governance of migrants integration during the crisis, Polish cities' response to forced migration from Ukraine.
Since the Russian invasion of Ukraine on February 24th, over 4 million people crossed Polish-Ukrainian border or arrived to Poland from Ukraine. 3.7 million were Ukrainian citizens. And that's important distinction because Poland doesn't provide any longer-term protection for non-Ukrainian citizens. So many of those people had to flee farther to usually Western European countries. And some people returned from Poland to Ukraine, so Polish border guards registered over 2 million border crossing from Poland to Ukraine. But many of those border crossings are circular migration where people travel to visit their relatives, check their houses or celebrate Easter and then return back to Poland.
Zurzeit seien offiziell rund 1,2 Millionen Ukrainerinnen in Polen als Flüchtlinge registriert. Mehr als die Hälfte seien Kinder, sagt Lukasiewicz. In Warschau hätten vor dem Krieg rund 1,8 Millionen Menschen gelebt, jetzt seien es rund 2 Millionen.
All of those numbers create a massive challenge for all levels of administration and just civil society. And in practice, these are small and large municipalities as well as local communities that since the first moment of the crisis started responding and are keep on responding until now.
Und Lukasiewicz berichtet, wie stark eine andere polnische Stadt angewachsen ist.
And just to give you an overview from some Polish cities, a city of Rzeszów, which is like a small, almost 200, used to be a 200,000 people next to town in southeastern Poland. Within the 2 months, the population of Rzeszów grew to 300,000, which accounts for like a half of a population. So the government introduced new act on assistance to citizens of Ukraine in connection with the conflict. And this act gives people a right to stay in Poland for 18 months. That can be extended. It gives them access, immediate access to the labor market, mainstream healthcare system, welfare system, including the child benefits, which is quite substantial in Poland for every child. Then one-time small cash transfer and very small financial compensation for people who agreed to hold Ukrainians in their private apartments.
Die Zivilgesellschaft hätte mitgeholfen, die Flüchtlinge zu versorgen.
So, as you can imagine, the major challenge was poor coordination of volunteers and real chaos on the ground that we experienced it in the first months of the crisis. And of course, low efficiency of such privately provided aid, whether it's housing or relocation. As you can imagine, a person who is driving a private car and pick random people at the border cannot be anyhow as efficient as organized government-run transportation. Trains or buses. So it was just very inefficient. And also the volunteer-based aid was often overworked. People experienced burnout. There was very high turnover. People often missed skills and knowledge how to help victims of war and people traumatized at the border.
Doch Karolina Lukasiewicz berichtet auch von Fällen von Menschenhandel.
And as a result, we heard of many cases of frauds or even human trafficking or sexual assaults, which happened in this all crowd of people going to the border and trying to help.
Zusammenfassend sagt Karolina Lukasiewicz:
The way Polish cities responded to the crisis depended on different factors, like the government factor and the central government policies turned out to be very important because, as I mentioned, before the crisis, central government has been working hard on developing different anti-migration policies with hostile policies at the Polish-Belarusian border, rejecting asylum claims, cutting funds for NGOs working with migrants and also cutting budgets for local administration that is more supportive towards migrants. However, everybody agreed when the crisis started that the help has to be established for the Ukrainian migrants, which is very different from and refugees, which is a very different category than the people applying for asylum at the Polish-Belarusian border. The city's response depended on the way cities operated before the crisis, so the demographics of the cities, the pre-war Ukrainian population that in some cities was very large, the city's economic situation, and also this established grassroots networks of cooperation with migrant communities. And also the response depended largely on the characteristic of migrants, because as much as, for example, from a government level, the migrants coming from Afghanistan or Syria are not considered as deserving as the one from Ukraine. So there are these new modes. And it also depends on the established migrant communities in Polish cities, which are very large in some cities.
Irene Theodor arbeitet in Bukarest für das Jesuit Refugee Service. Sie hat im Rahmen des Panels zum Thema The Romanian Response to Ukrainian Displacement, Contrasting Views from a Civil Society Perspective gesprochen und macht gleich zu Beginn klar.
Well, Romania hasn't really had a lot of experience with immigration in the past 20 years, let's say. We've had a steady flow of about, 2,000 refugees, asylum seekers per year coming into our country, which is very little. With the exception of last year when we had almost 10,000 because of the Afghanistan situation, which was a total disaster for us. Because of that, we don't really have many mechanisms, procedures, or willingness to deal with this.
Und was macht das Jesuit Refugee Service?
We could offer, with the funding that we get, all the services that we think are necessary, from language courses to opening a daycare for children, to offering cash assistance and voucher assistance, reimbursing medical payments for medicine or for general consultations. We are finding accommodation and paying for this accommodation in normal private apartments, which I think this is ultimately what integration means, just to access this market like a normal person would.
Bis Ende Mai 2022 sind rund 90.000 Ukrainerinnen nach Rumänien geflüchtet, wie überall hauptsächlich Frauen und Kinder. Die meisten befinden sich in Bukarest bzw. in der Grenzregion zur Ukraine.
So yeah, Romania mostly remains a transit country and the people who choose to remain only do so because they are close to home. And they do visit their home very often. They go there to plant potatoes. They go there just to see if their house is still there. They go there to see their relatives. So there is a lot of movement on that border. They don't really gain any benefits from temporary protection in Romania. What they get is a paper, they get it instantly. You go to the office and you apply and they get a paper like this. It's exactly like this with their picture, their name, date of birth, a personal numerical code, no address, just something that basically allows them to stay in Romania, and I will elaborate on their rights. Really, the reward for them is not so high, so most of them prefer to wait until their 90 days run out.
Und welche Rechte haben die ukrainischen Flüchtlinge in Rumänien?
They have the right to gain information related to temporary protection. They have the right to work, which is very important. In theory, they have the right to social assistance in the same way that Romanian citizens do. In reality, they don't. The problem being that this document doesn't have an address. So they are afraid that people could ask for benefits in multiple cities. Obviously, it would be a problem to ask for an address to qualify for temporary protection because most people do not have a stable address. But this way isn't better either, because this way they can't gain any sort of social benefits. Not for their children, not for themselves, not for anything. No kind of social assistance. They have the right to free emergency medical care, but only emergency. For the other type of medical care, it's the same as Romanian citizens, which is you have to pay for the insurance to get it. And even then it's pretty difficult.
Um das schlecht organisierte staatliche Unterbringungssystem für Flüchtlinge zu entlasten und Anreize für die private Unterbringung zu schaffen, bekommt jeder Gastgeber rund 15 Euro pro Tag. In der Folge beschreibt Irene Theodor, wie unzureichend die Koordinationsarbeit der rumänischen Regierung zur Versorgung der ukrainischen Flüchtlinge ist und wie die Verantwortung auf die Zivilgesellschaft abgewälzt wird.
These are the rights that are in the EU directive, but are not really something that they have access to in Romania in reality. Access to suitable accommodation or housing. There is no access to suitable accommodation or housing. There is no governmental response to this. There is not even at the local level, there is no system in place for this. Opportunities for families to reunite in certain circumstances. Nope. Access to banking services, in theory, yes. In reality, it's very difficult because it depends on the willingness of each bank to do this. And if you do manage to find a bank that is willing to do this, it takes over a month for them to open a bank account. And most of the times, they don't want to release your card with the bank account. And the government released in partnership with UNHCR this platform, Dopomoha, which means help in Ukrainian, where private people register their houses. And technically, the authorities match the Ukrainian refugees with the houses provided by the people in the 50-20 program. So this is what is happening in terms of reception right now.
Dann kommt Irene Theodor auf einen weiteren Aspekt der Flüchtlingsbetreuung in Rumänien zu sprechen.
And now to the refugee coordination model. The UN basically stepped in, I told you, a month after this happened. A lot of extra personnel came to the office. They have over 100 staff now, whereas before they had 5 people. But nothing is really happening. The point is that UNHCR started distributing money, cash. But I think of the 30,000 people who have registered, only 5,000 have received this cash. I don't know why. But what is happening every day and every month in this coordination model is that we have this working group and this working group and this working group and this working group and this and this and this and this and this, and we just meet and we talk about it all the time, but nothing actually happens. We just talk about what everyone is doing and that's it. So I personally think that is very inefficient.
Über die Situation von NGOs in Rumänien im Kontext mit der Flüchtlingslage sagt Irene Theodor.
There is an immense pressure on national NGOs to fulfill this role of finding appropriate accommodation, of organizing Romanian language courses, English language courses, of integrating children in the educational system, of providing tablets to the children, of ensuring access to the labor market. Anything you can think of, this pressure is on the NGOs. And we will collapse at some point because it's natural. There's a lot of frustration on the part of Ukrainians, considering how many they are and how limited the resources are, especially regarding cash assistance and the voucher system. We have plenty of communication with the government and with international organizations now, but to what end? We have endless talk of duplication. Everyone talks about how our projects should not duplicate. Two NGOs shouldn't offer Romanian language courses. But why? We have 90,000 people in our country. What are we talking about? If someone offers the cash assistance that UNHCR gives, it's one time and it's 100 euros per family member. Why should we not duplicate this? Is this too much? Are 5,000 people receiving vouchers enough? This is something that still I don't understand to this day. Another problem is the shifting public opinion. As I said, people, either through negative experiences, either through just general exhaustion, are not so eager anymore to help in any way. There is a need for employment, but there is a problem that the people don't speak the language. A lot of them don't speak English. So this is very difficult. It's very difficult because the moms don't have where to leave their children while they go to work because of the whole education problem I told you about. There's a need for integrated services and for integration services. We need to duplicate everything that everyone is doing to be able to respond to this. Another problem is there are many returns to Ukraine, permanent returns. We have situations of mothers leaving their children here with child protection authorities in foster, basically, renouncing their children so they could go back to Ukraine and care for their elderly parents. Our child protection system is not equipped to deal with this at all.
Eine weitere Diskutantin war Birgit Glorius von der TU Chemnitz. Ich frage Sie nach den interessantesten Ergebnissen Ihrer Studien zu den Fluchtbewegungen der Jahre 2015 bzw. 2022.
Das interessanteste Ergebnis ist sicherlich die Haltung der Bevölkerung, die ja 2015 bei den Geflüchteten, die damals gekommen sind, ja doch relativ schnell dann zwiegespalten war, also sich zum Teil auch sehr, sehr kritisch gegenüber dieser Art der Migration geäußert hat und auch sehr, ja, misstrauisch gewesen ist, während das heute zunächst eine sehr, ja, offene Atmosphäre gewesen ist, sehr viel Solidarität. Und jetzt verspüre ich irgendwie, dass es, wie soll ich das sagen, man hält sich ein bisschen zurück mit öffentlicher Meinungsbildung. Ich weiß aber nicht, ob das jetzt besonders gut ist und wie es jetzt in der Zukunft sich weiter auswirken kann. Also möglicherweise schlägt da auch nochmal die öffentliche Wahrnehmung um und die öffentliche Meinung.
Welche Empfehlungen würden Sie aus den Studien von 2015 und auch jetzt zusammengefasst als Conclusio quasi an die Politik richten in Bezug auf Menschen, die flüchten mussten und nach Europa kommen?
Wir können speziell die Situation in Deutschland anschauen, aber vieles davon lässt sich wirklich auch auf Europa übertragen. Und der wesentlichste und größte Unterschied aus der Perspektive der Betroffenen ist ja wirklich, dass die 2022er ukrainischen Geflüchteten sich selbst das Land und den Ort aussuchen können, an dem sie eben ins Exil gehen wollen. Während Menschen, die auch heute noch ankommen, eben im Asylsystem, sich das nicht aussuchen können. Wir sehen aus etlichen Studien, dass die Integrationschancen und auch die Erfolge der Integration wesentlich besser sind, wenn man sich den Ort selbst aussuchen kann. Resultierend daraus würde ich mir wünschen, dass wir Politikansätze entwickeln, die diese freie Wohnortwahl, die Ziellandwahl bzw. die Berücksichtigung von Integrationsfaktoren bei der Weiterverteilung auch für andere Asylsuchende berücksichtigt werden können.
Sehen Sie diesbezüglich innerhalb der EU Handlungsbedarf oder was hat sich da getan seit 2015? Sind ja doch immerhin 7 Jahre vergangen. Da hätte man doch vielleicht auch ein Framework entwickeln können, das da geschickt umgeht mit solchen Herausforderungen.
Ja, also wenn wir mal ehrlich sind, hat sich ja eigentlich da ganz wenig getan in den letzten 7 Jahren. Irgendwie ist dieses Thema aus dem Fokus geraten, sicherlich auch durch die Corona-Pandemie. Offensichtlich sind wir alle nur begabt dafür, eine Krise auf einmal zu berücksichtigen und nicht mehrere gleichzeitig oder auch mal dran zu bleiben an dem Thema. Es gab ja diverse Debatten eben während 2015, 16, 17, die Asylsysteme zu reformieren innerhalb Europas, also das gemeinsame europäische Asylsystem. Was sich de facto getan hat, ist eigentlich nur die Verstärkung der Grenzsicherung nach außen, also Verstärkung von Frontex, die Beibehaltung der Flüchtlingslager auf den griechischen Inseln und der Versuch, mit Drittstaaten Partnerschaftsabkommen abzuschließen, um sich den Zuzug aus Drittländern nach Europa vom Leibe zu halten. Das ist eigentlich das Einzige, was in der Richtung passiert ist.
In ihrem Vortrag führt Birgit Glorius aus, dass im Jahr 2015 Deutschland rund 900.000 Flüchtlinge aufgenommen hat. Heuer waren es rund 400.000 Menschen aus der Ukraine.
On the photo you can see the train station of Berlin someday in March. You can see basically volunteers, so this the reception system, as we heard from Irene and from Carolina, was in the beginning 100% managed by volunteers and just later the relief services stepped in.
Dann präsentiert Glorius interessante Zahlen aus einem Paper von Forscherkolleginnen und verweist auf einen Unterschied zwischen den Jahren 2015 und 2022.
Where they presented some numbers of the Polish border police regarding the mobility over the Ukrainian-Polish border. Blue number are the arrivals per day and the reddish numbers are the exits from Poland to Ukraine. And what you can easily see is this massive wave in the first 3 weeks of the conflict. And then a situation where you have more and more fluidity, that means what Carolina already addressed, a lot of people who are temporarily returning. And as you can see in the end of April, it's almost the same numbers who are arriving as those who are at least temporarily returning to look after their houses, the elderly parents, their husbands, and so on. And so this is like one first interesting information, and which is definitely a difference to 2015, because 2015 the people who came then could not that easily go back and forth and return. It was just like the physical distance was too large. The possibilities were not there.
Zur Rezeption von Flüchtlingen sagt Glorius.
In 2015 we had mixed flows. We had different groups of asylum-seeking migrants from Syria, from Iran, Afghanistan, from African countries, also from the West Balkan countries, which meant for the reception process and the processing of asylum applications, it just in practical terms, you not only needed a large number of decision makers on the ground, but also a large number of people with various competencies in translating those different languages, a lot of intercultural competencies in dealing with all those different cultures, religious habits, and so on. A large proportion of those who arrived in 2015 suffered of protracted displacement. That were people who were on the flight already for years sometimes. Families who with children who did not attend school for 2 or 3 years. So that was a huge difference with the Ukrainians who are coming, who are fleeing from war, who are, at least in Germany, we can say it's about 95% who are registering are Ukrainians.
Viele Flüchtlinge kamen im Jahr 2015 ohne Papiere nach Europa, was lange Asylverfahren von zum Teil mehreren Jahren nach sich gezogen hat, sagt Glorius. Birgit Glorius beschreibt in der Folge, wie schwierig es für Flüchtlinge in Deutschland sei, eine Wohnung am freien Markt anzumieten. Zum Teil gäbe es Diskriminierung, zum Teil wäre es schwierig, leistbare Wohnungen mit ausreichend Platz für beispielsweise eine Familie mit 6 Personen zu finden.
If you look at the homeless statistics, it's now the majority of the people who are in the homeless statistic is made up of refugees, with about 400,000 registered homeless in the homeless statistics of 2018. The overall numbers in this homeless statistic is 680,000. That does not mean that 400,000 people are living on the streets, but that does mean that those people in 2018 did not have a private accommodation for themselves. And that's the group of 2015. So we are still dealing with those follow-up issues now in 2022.
Birgit Glorius bestätigt auch für Deutschland die anfangs chaotische Betreuungssituation, in der sich die Zivilgesellschaft eingesetzt hat. Und sie berichtet, wie Lukasiewicz für Polen ebenfalls von Übergriffen gegenüber Flüchtlingen in Berlin. Dorthin wollten die meisten Ukrainerinnen, auch weil es in der Hauptstadt eine größere ukrainische Community gibt.
We had those situations where men came to the Berlin train station, addressed Ukrainian women, offered them private accommodation, and took those women with them, and the women escaped from these apartments and later reported to relief agencies that they were harassed or sexually abused. We had those situations, and that's really sad, I think, after all those experiences we had in 2015, that this happens again.
Abschließend sagt Birgit Glorius von der TU Chemnitz.
What we did not talk about yet, what will happen after 3 years? Will the temporary protection directive be prolonged, or will it like enter into some kind of resident status?
Das war C3 Radio. Heute zur Konferenz The War in Ukraine and Human Displacement, die anlässlich des Weltflüchtlingstages von 20. bis 21. Juni 2022 in Wien stattgefunden hat. Im C3 Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung, mitorganisiert von der ÖFSE. Abschließende Hinweise. Wer zum Thema Flucht recherchieren möchte, kann das natürlich in der C3-Bibliothek in der Sensengasse 3 1090 Wien tun. Informationen dazu und zu den Öffnungszeiten der Bibliothek sowie zu allen weiteren Angeboten und Veranstaltungen im C3 findet man auf www.zentrum3.at. Über die ÖFSE, die Österreichische Forschungsstiftung für internationale Entwicklung, informiert man sich auf www.ofse.at. C3 Radio gibt es immer jeden ersten Montag im Monat um 20.30 Uhr auf Radio Orange 94.0 und ständig als Podcast auf Spotify. In unserer nächsten Ausgabe im September 2022 berichten wir über die Verleihung des C3 Awards. Das ist ein entwicklungspolitischer Preis für vorwissenschaftliche Arbeiten. Folgen Sie bitte der ÖFSE und C3 Radio auf Facebook. Auf Wiederhören sagt Jürgen Planck. C3 Radio aus dem Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung. Mit den Organisationen Baobab, Frauensolidarität, Mattersburger Kreis, ÖFSE und Paulo Freire Zentrum. Weitere Informationen und Podcast auf www.zentrum3.at.